In recent years, we've realised that some cancers can spread, not just around the body, but between individuals. And a very striking example of this is devil facial tumour disease that's wiping out the Tasmanian devil. We think that when these animals fight, cancerous tissue from one can be injected into another animal by a bite. There, it takes root and grows, using an immune trick to prevent it from being rejected by its new host. Recently, though, scientists discovered a new form of devil facial tumour disease, DFT2, which is distinct from the first one. This hasn't evolved to hide from the immune system yet, but if it does evolve to do that, then it could be curtains for the species. Hannah Siddle is studying these diseases at the University of Southampton.
Not many people will know that some cancers can actually become transmissible. And what we've been interested in is two transmissible tumours that have occurred in the Tasmanian devil, which is a marsupial species endemic to the island of Tasmania. And in the mid-1990s, a really nasty transmissible tumour emerged called devil facial tumour 1, or DFT1. And it's had a really negative impact on the population. So in some areas, 90% of the devils have actually died. But our most recent work is actually on a more recently emerged contagious cancer in the Tasmanian devil. So this is a species where lightning has kind of struck twice, if you like.
How does the cancer spread from one Tasmanian devil to another?
We think that this occurs by biting. Now, this new transmissible tumour, DFT2, which emerged only quite recently, also looks a lot like DFT1. And actually, if you looked at these two tumours, even though they're completely different diseases, they look really similar. So they still cause these huge tumours around the faces of the animals. So with DFT2, we haven't shown this experimentally, but we think that they're also passed by biting.
It was a number of years ago that Amory Pierce put some cells from the first of these types of tumours under a microscope, and she showed that they had to be clonal. It was exactly the same genetics in each of them. So how did this second type of tumour emerge? And how do you know that that's history repeating itself? Or, as you put it, lightning striking twice?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because actually, I mean, what you'd kind of assume is that this new tumour would be somehow related to the first tumour, right? That would feel more obvious, I think, because of how rare these are. But actually, when people first discovered this second tumour, and it looked exactly the same, but they found that it expressed some proteins on the cell surface of the tumour cells that were different to DFT1. And then looking a little bit deeper at the genetics, they found that actually the karyotype, or the chromosomes, of this new tumour were really different to DFT1, the first tumour. And then going even deeper and looking at some of the specific genetic markers, they were different as well. And they were also different to the host animals. So from this, it's really clear that this new tumour actually emerged in a completely independent animal, so a completely different animal that came from a different part of Tasmania and lived much more recently.
One of the first things that you published on this was the discovery as to why, when you put foreign tissue from one of these animals into another animal, the immune system doesn't recognise it and get rid of it. Why is that?
Initially, when we were looking at this disease in Tasmanian devils, we thought that it was just because they had low genetic diversity. And that's why we could have these cells grafting, if you like, as a graft between them. Because we know in humans and mice that you can't just take skin or a kidney and transplant it to someone else. It just doesn't work. The immune system sees it, it rejects it. And what we were able to show with the first tumour is that the tumour cells have downregulated or lost really important molecules from the cell surface, which are called MHC, class 1 molecules. And the tumour has cleverly lost these to make it invisible to a certain subset of immune cells called T cells. And so that's how DFT1 really probably became so dangerous and managed to kill so many devils.
It flies under the immune radar.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Does the second type that you're now describing pull the same stunt?
Yeah, so that's what we were asking the question in this paper. And as so often happens in science, you start out answering one question and actually you end up answering something different. But we did manage to answer that first question. And to our surprise, the second tumour, DFT2, still expressed MHC class 1. So we're like, how is it possibly moving between individuals? And I don't think in this paper that we've actually been able to conclude this 100%, but what we've proposed based on our results is that actually the tumour and the host animals that are within that population actually share a lot of their MHC class 1 molecules. So in the human population, you have so much what we call diversity, a genetic diversity in these molecules, that you can't do transplants. But we think that perhaps that this tumour has kind of stayed at the moment within its like favourite animals that have very similar MHC molecules to what it has.
It's sort of showing us how DFT1 could have evolved in the first place. It could have started out a bit like this and then evolved to have this downregulation of the immune response. This one is now doing exactly the same thing.
Yes, and if that's right, we're really concerned about how quickly the new tumour could spread, because if the fact that it has expressed MHC class 1 has kind of held it back or kept it in a constrained population, if it loses MHC class 1, presumably those constraints are off and it could really spread and transmit much more easily. And from what we know at the moment, it seems as if it is just as aggressive in terms of killing the animals as DFT1. And unfortunately, though, we have far fewer devils. They have less genetic diversity than they did, you know, 20 years ago before they got any of these diseases. So we have a much more vulnerable species.
And looking on the bright side, does what you've discovered shed any light on how we might be able to stop this thing?
Yeah, that's kind of the million-dollar question, isn't it? And I wish I had a better answer to that. One thing that my lab is working on is trying to design better vaccine strategies against this. And, you know, that is a pretty tall order. But we have had some success against DFT1 that still needs more work, but does look as if it's promising. And I think at the moment, though, it's really getting a better understanding of these tumours, because if you think about it, if we didn't even know that these tumours were losing MHC class 1, we might be quite complacent that this tumour was just going to stay confined to these animals. So really understanding, and I think that's a general lesson, isn't it? The more we understand about how diseases and pathogens work, then, you know, the more chance we have of being able to come up with ways of preventing them spreading further.
Well, as they say, the devil is in the detail. Hannah Siddle there.